Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Sexual molestation by members of the clergy seem to be in the news almost every day. Some people claim that this has occurred for a long time in many different places. Others believe that these revelations, as they apply to the Catholic Church, will evolve to the benefit of the Catholic Church. Sister Jane Kelly has been a nun for over 55 years, and for several years has tried to have a priest in her parish taken out of the ministry for child molestation and thievery. Sister Jane Kelly is also the author of a soon-to-be-published book entitled Taught to Believe the Unbelievable, A New Vision of Hope for Church and Society. Sister Jane believes that the current crisis of sexual and fiscal abuse in the Catholic Church is the best thing that has happened to the Church. I met with her in the studios of Radio Curious and started our conversation on this topic. Sister Jane Kelly, welcome to Radio Curious.
Thank you, Barry. I'm delighted to be here and have this opportunity to share with you and your listeners.
You've mentioned that the issues of sexual abuse and the identification of these issues is the best thing that's ever happened to the Catholic Church. What do you mean by that? Why is it so good?
Absolutely, Barry. We are in a time in the Church's history that is so very hopeful. And this crisis of sexual abuse and fiscal abuse and all this cover-up is a real challenge. And though it's a crisis, it is also a marvelous opportunity. And what has happened through this is that the laity are no longer giving those yeses.
But how will a challenge be met if the leadership of the Church is saying that there will not be full disclosure?
Okay. Barry, when we speak of Church, I speak and understand and believe that there are two churches parallel. There's this male, clerical, hierarchical structure that dominates the institution known as church. Over here, we have church, ecclesia, a gathering, a coming together of the believers, the faithful of Jesus Christ. They come together, they break bread, they share a cup, they celebrate, and that is the church that was instituted by Jesus Christ. This other church was created by man, and we see the power and the secrecy and the dominance. You have to realize, I'm a Catholic. I was born a Catholic. I'm 72 years old. I'm a religious, a nun, for over 55 years. Catholicism is in my blood. I could no longer stop being a Catholic than I could stop being a Kelly.
So the threats to you or the possibility of excommunication means what?
Oh, that's interesting, Barry. Actually, excommunication means that a person can no longer celebrate the sacraments. They are outside of the church.
But they can still be celebrated by that person, couldn't they?
Oh, absolutely. And that's where we get to a theological point. And the theological point is this, that the church claims, believes, teaches that Jesus Christ becomes present to the bread and wine when a duly ordained priest is standing at the altar. I no longer believe that that is essential. What I believe is going back to the early church. And if you read in the Acts, the Christians daily went to the temple and then gathered in the evening, broke bread, shared the cup, and celebrated Eucharist. Then, when they were expelled from the temple, they had to ask themselves, are we a religion? They were referred to as a new way. If so, we've got to have a sacrifice. You have to have a sacrifice to have a priest. And that's where the theology developed on the Mass being the unbloody sacrifice of Jesus Christ.
Sister Jane Kelly, can you explain to us your thoughts on why you feel the issue of sexual molestation is being talked about so much and it seems to be so prevalent?
That's a very good point, Barry. And I'd like to start off by saying you have to look at the issue in terms of priests who sexually abuse children, pedophiles. We'll also see where they abuse women. Now, only 0.1% of all the priests in the United States have been accused of sexual misconduct. What I believe is the real crisis and the real sin, if you will, is the cover-up by the bishops, archbishops, and cardinals. They covered these men and simply moved them to another ministry or another parish where they again could molest children.
What's the thinking behind that?
Okay, the thinking behind that, Barry, is this. In the Code of Canon Law, that's church law, there is a basic principle. Every bishop knows it, every cardinal knows it, certainly the Pope knows it, and the priests know it. And it's this. The worst thing that can happen is that scandal would fall on the church. And so if you're a bishop and you get a report that this priest has molested this child, you want to cover that up because it would be scandalous. And I saw in this diocese, and I've been in this diocese for 28 years, that the leader of this diocese going back to 1973, 74, 75, was covering up a priest who was a pedophile. And that priest was allowed to be near children, minister children, for over 30 years. And then this is where the crisis came in, as far as the church is concerned. That hit the newspapers. That was a shock that was felt across the nation. And of course, it was a shock that we felt locally because one of our priests not only stole from our collection, but also molested young men. And so we in this locality had experienced priests who was guilty, really, of sexual misconduct, episcopal misconduct. Roughly, we had five over the years. And so when you look at that, and you ask yourself, why the cover-up? Barry, the church is known for its secrecy. If you know something about a priest or a bishop, you don't say anything about that.
What is the import of maintaining the secrecy?
The import of maintaining the secrecy is that this hierarchy, going all the way up to the top, would have us believe that the Roman Catholic Church is the church. Salvation comes through this church. And if that be the case, then the priests and the leadership must be people of integrity, honesty, pure, chaste, all the adjectives to set this person apart from the ordinary layperson. And as long as you're trying to keep that image, you're going to have to end up lying, covering up. That's no longer the case. The secrets are out. And they're not just out in this diocese, in this country, but all over the world. And a crisis that came out regarding the universal church was that it was known for over 7 years, if not longer, that nuns in different countries, including the United States, were being asked to have sex with the priest if they wanted the Eucharist or the Sacrament of Reconciliation. And when the major superiors of these congregations were made aware of that, they went to the local bishops, and the bishops did nothing about it. For 7 years, they tried. Finally, they went to Rome and asked for an audience with the Pope, and also, at that time, the second highest official in the church, and laid it out there. And the response they got was, why are you bringing it to this level? You should be taking it to your local leader.
But you just said they did, and there was no response.
No response?
At the local level.
At the local, exactly. When I say no response, it was they took the information but did nothing about it. Just like I gave information over 2 years to try to have a local priest taken out of ministry. How did they treat me? They ignored me.
And this is to, as you describe, avoid scandal within
Absolutely.
The church?
Absolutely.
So then how do the leaders of the church, in your opinion, live with this dichotomy?
Barry, that is the question I kept asking myself. And I remember saying it to a priest when I found out about this priest in our diocese who had been molesting children for years. And I said to this priest, I think that man is a pedophile. I saw him with youth on a retreat, inappropriate behavior. And that priest said to me, Jane, unfortunately, that is true, but we only know it through the confessional. And my response was, how do you go to bed at night and sleep knowing that this man is out there molesting children? How?
And what was their answer?
The answer was the seal of confession. And according to the seal of confession, I've always sort of smiled on this one, is the seal of confession has never been broken. Whenever someone confessed a sin to a priest, it has never been broken. My question is, who did the survey? Who polled all these people? And I had an experience where a priest was divulging to me something that he had learned through the confessional about a person. I no longer believe that Jesus instituted a sacrament that would protect priests from being accused or made to be accountable for their sexual misconduct. I think that sacrament didn't come into the church until around the 15th century, and it was never founded by Christ. And the irony of this is that here's a priest, a pedophile, and now we know through experts, psychologists and psychiatrists, that that is a condition that can never be cured. That's a condition that must always be guarded. They must keep away from children. The other thing they found out, and this was a priest who wrote a book on priesthood, is that these pedophiles are sociopaths. They don't see anything wrong with what they're doing. So they're living this shadowed existence, and then over here, they're the shining priest celebrating the sacraments, etc. And so we have a case right now in our diocese where a priest has been accused, arrested, tried, and found guilty of sexually molesting little girls. This man has no feeling for the victims, only says that, well, it's the women's fault because they all chase me because of my uniform.
I want to ask you about what you think the responsibility of the larger church, the organized church, is to these women and the male victims. But first I want to say that this week on Radio Curious, we're talking with Sister Jane Kelly, who lives in Ukiah, California. This is Radio Curious, and I'm Barry Vogel. Jane, what is the obligation or the duty of the larger church in relationship to the victims?
In relationship to?
The victims.
The victims. Oh, Barry, this is the deep wound. This is the wound on the body of Christ that needs healing. And you have to realize up to about 1985, there were cases of pedophile among priests, cover up by bishops, but they took the approach, the leadership took the approach that big business does, corporations do, and that is, if someone becomes a victim because of the action, misconduct of this priest, then you settle out of court.
With a seal of secrecy.
Absolutely. And that was one of the qualifications or one of the points. If you settled out of court, now we have a case right now in the United States where a leader, top leader of the church, it has been found out that he paid, his diocese paid $450,000 to a man who claimed that he had been sexually molested by this hierarchy person. Now, it settled out of court. What does that do to the reputation of that leader now that that has come out? Because I believe this leader is a holy man. I don't believe he ever molested that young boy.
Why then would he settle?
Because of the element of secrecy and scandal. If this gets out, it's going to bring scandal to the church. Better to pay the person off. And this is what has been going on for years.
But that's an awful lot of money to ask someone to be quiet when there's a feeling that there was no violation.
I know, Barry, but there again, it's, I think he was ill-advised by his lawyer that better to settle out of court than to risk this hitting the newspaper. I think he should allow to do that. See, what has happened, Barry, is this crisis in the universal church is not just a sexual crisis, it's a fiscal crisis. So far, over $100 billion has been paid out by church leaders to settle out of court.
Where's this going? Bringing it back to your first comment that you feel this is the best thing that has happened to the Catholic Church.
Oh, Barry, it is so wonderful. And I thank God every day that I'm alive and willing to experience it. This is the most hopeful thing that the church has ever done or been brought to do since Vatican II. And the reason I say that is this. The mystique, the mystery that the hierarchical leaders of this church maintain so that the clerics are apart from the laity. They are the privileged class. They are the ones who have all the wisdom, all the power to celebrate these sacraments. Now, the clay feet appear, and these are not individuals who have integrity or honesty or have any concern for the well-being of our children, the leader of our diocese.
So where's all this going?
Where's it going?
Where do you expect it will be?
Okay. What I think is going to happen, and I think it's already in the process, this male hierarchical structure is crumbling. It has lost its integrity, its honesty, whatever. And what is happening on the other side is that the laity have come together and have joined into reshaping what the Catholic Church should be all about.
Do you think that will include marriage for the clergy?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
How long do you think that'll be before that occurs?
It's already happened. To say that we don't have married priests is simply ridiculous. I remember this wonderful theologian, and he was giving a talk in Washington, and I was present for it, and he told this marvelous story. Now, this was just 4 or 5 years ago. He was in Africa, in a little village, and he went to celebrate Mass with the community. And it was a funeral Mass. Their pastor had just died, and the bishop had come to celebrate the Eucharist. After he read the gospel, the leader went over and sat down. Silence. Silence. what's happening here. After a very long pregnant silence, the leader stood up, came forward, and said, I am going to sit here until two couples come forth and are willing to take on the priestly ministry of this village. Turned around, sat down. About an hour later, two couples came forward. And he questioned them. And they said, yes, we will. The woman said, yes, I will support my husband. He said, I'll be back next week and tell you which couple. The same time, this priest was approached by this sister in Africa, in this little village, and said, Father, could you come with me? I've been ministering to a woman who's 100 years old, and she's dying, and she would like to confess her sins and receive the last sacraments. So he gets in the jeep, and they go out to the bush, and he goes into this little hut, looks over in this dark corner at this little old lady lying on a mat. The sister goes up and starts talking to the lady in their dialect. Now, this priest didn't have a clue as to what was being said. So he goes over and he hears the confession. Of course, he doesn't know what the lady is confessing. Gives her absolution, gives her communion. And this prelate said to us, who should have been anointing that woman, forgiving her sins? The sister, not me. I didn't know what was going on. Now, Barry, to say we don't have married priests is simply not true.
How about in the United States?
In the United States, without a doubt, and we had a case, and this goes all the way back, 35 years, this wonderful, wonderful priest had married and had fathered a child, but kept it secret until finally, after 7 years, it came out. And of course, then he was told he'd have to leave the ministry. Secondly, apart from their being married priests, look at what happened a few years back when the High Anglican Church in England decided that they would ordain women. The priests in that church who were married and had children did not want to see women ordained. So they left that church and were initiated, incorporated into the Roman Catholic Church. All they had to say was a profession of faith. Now these men, with their wives and their children, were becoming pastors. One such case in San Francisco. And so here are these celibate priests who can't get married. My advice to any young person who wants to become a priest, go to the Anglican Church. Profess your faith there. It has all the sacraments, it's recognized by Rome, and then you can get married, have children, and be a priest. Do you see all of the legal points here, how artificial they are, and how self-serving they are?
Who do they serve when you say they're self-serving?
They're serving themselves. You see, Barry.
But who is they?
They are the leaders of this Roman Catholic Church, this hierarchy.
Do you see that leadership changing?
Oh, absolutely.
How?
And the way it's being changed is, take an example, what's happening in this country. All the cardinals, 13 in number, bishops, archbishops, have been found guilty of covering up. And what did they do? And what do they have to do? They resign.
Well, Sister Jane Kelly, I want to thank you for joining us on Radio Curious.
Thank you, Barry.
And there are a couple of things. One is, tell us the name of your forthcoming book.
I would be delighted. The name of my book is Taught to Believe the Unbelievable. New vision of hope for church and society. And Barry, I have a blueprint in that book that shows what I think needs to happen to make our church the church that Jesus Christ instituted.
And Sister Jane Kelly, before we do close, I'd like to ask you to tell us about an interesting book that you've read lately.
Oh, wonderful, Barry. It's called Hope for the Flowers. I don't know if it's still in print or not. It came out in the 70s. I'm sorry I don't have the author in front of me, but it's a marvelous story about a striped caterpillar and a yellow caterpillar. And they see themselves in this cocoon where they're shut off from everything else around them. And that's the way I felt. I was in a cocoon, surrounded and bound by these man-made laws. And the story goes, and eventually they break through their cocoon, and the last page shows a beautiful yellow butterfly and a striped butterfly, and they're flying free. And that's the way I feel. That's why I wrote the book. I want people to become as free as I have. Jesus said, "I'm the truth. Believe me, and I will set you free. The truth will set you free." And that is what has happened to me. I've never been more Catholic in my life. I've never been more free. I've never been more happy.
Sister Jane Kelly, thank you for joining us on Radio Curious.
Thank you, Barry, for the opportunity.
Sister Jane Kelly is the author of a soon-to-be-published book entitled Taught to Believe the Unbelievable, A New Vision of Hope for Church and Society. The book that she recommends to read is Hope for the Flowers by Trina Paulus. The opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of this radio station, its management, or board of directors, nor do they necessarily represent the opinions of Radio Curious. There are over 750 archives on our website, radiocurious.org, and I'm honored to tell you that Radio Curious is now part of the collection at the Library of Congress. We appreciate your cards, ideas, and letters, and do enjoy hearing from you. The email is curious@radiocurious.org. The postal address is 700 West Smith Street, Ukiah, California, 95482. The phone is 707-621-5075. Ignacio Ayala is the assistant producer. I'm host and producer, Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.